Of Advent, and I am going to do four messages as we go through Advent on each of the four candles: hope, love, peace, and joy. Today we look at hope in a message entitled Be the Hope. The story of Jesus in the temple is actually told in all but one of the Gospels. And usually I prefer to read Mark to the other Gospels, not just because I share a name with the Gospel. I actually think that it's important that it was the first gospel written. And I like how its author always quickly gets to the heart of the matter in whatever story. For this story, however, I much prefer Luke's gifted storytelling. I also like the fact that he places this story early on in Jesus' ministry. And by doing so, it sets the stage for what Jesus' ministry will be about. But the reality is, even in Mark, we can understand it as a story where Jesus reveals what his ministry is going to be about. A story about what he understands his purpose and his ministry to be for. In defining the purpose of his ministry, Jesus turns to Isaiah. Specifically, he is quoting from Isaiah 61. So just for context, let me read just a very brief excerpt from that passage. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because the Lord has anointed me. He has sent me to bring good news to the oppressed, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and release to the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to provide for those who mourn in Zion, to give them a garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the mantle of praise instead of a faint spirit. Now, Isaiah himself was, an unusual man. He, much like John the Baptist, who proclaimed the coming of Jesus, and who also quoted from Isaiah, to define what the purpose of Jesus' ministry would look like by saying that he would raise up the low places and lower the lofty mountains of superiority, that he would smooth the ways that are so unnecessarily cluttered with the stumbling blocks of the powerful, that he would make straight the twisted and crooked ways of those who seem to believe themselves to be superior. Much like John the Baptist, Isaiah decided that it would be a really neat idea to wander around in most of the time in a garment made of uncomfortably itchy camel hair, also known as a sackcloth. Now, depending on who you ask, there are several reasons that prophets wore terribly uncomfortable clothes. Some say that it was a sign of the difficult times that they were in store for their people. Others say that it was to prepare them for the rough and difficult times that they would face. Some would say that it set them apart from the things of this world and allowed them to focus more on what was important. And still, others say it was a sign of mourning for the tribes of Israel. Ultimately, the bottom line is, more than anything, it was mostly a symbolic thing, which makes what happens to Isaiah in chapter 20 really interesting. So the dress of a prophet is meant to be symbolic. So in chapter 20, we don't talk about this chapter much in church. It actually doesn't appear in any of the standard lectionaries for Sunday. In chapter 20 of Isaiah, it's revealed to us that for the past 3 years, under the orders of God, Isaiah, who was already set apart by not just his uncomfortably, but frankly, really weird way of dressing, we learn that God ordered Isaiah, and I'm going to quote here, to go and loose the sackcloth from your loins and take your sandals off your feet, leaving Isaiah barefoot and naked for 3 years. I kid you not. Well, like I just mentioned, the dress, or in this case, lack of dress, of prophets was a highly symbolic thing. So, what on earth could the symbolism of having Isaiah walk around barefoot and naked for 3 years be? I suppose the first thing is the same message that dressing oddly, like in sackcloth, gives. And the message is this. The message, not the messenger, is the important thing. Let me say that again. The message, not the messenger, is the important thing. See, our modern day sensibilities tell us that we should take much more seriously the words spoken by a minister who's dressed well or in full regalia, that we should take those words much more seriously than someone who was standing up here, say, in a t-shirt and cargo pants and flip-flops, which I would much rather be dressed as. But God prefers to send an entirely different message. God gives you no earthly reason to take the prophet seriously because God knows that truth, perhaps the naked truth, will command its own audience. I happen to think that another message is being delivered by having Isaiah walk around barefoot and naked. That message is that most of the time, actions speak louder than words. But as biblical scholar Dr. Gene Tucker says, actions are messages that speak louder than words, but they do become words. This coming week, 62 years ago, an African-American woman sat down in the front seat of a bus because her feet were just too tired. Actions are messages that can turn into words and can change the future. Or as noted author and activist Howard Zinn once said, we don't have to engage in grand heroic actions to participate in the process of change. Small acts, when multiplied by millions and millions of people, can transform the world. You see, actions, no matter how small, are messages that can transform the world. And I would argue not just any kind of action. It's a very specific kind of action. History teaches us that the kind of action most likely to affect change is authentic action. Action that strips us down to the bare reality of who we are. No pretense, no hidden agenda, no fear of what others might say or think of you. You see, authentic actions, no matter how small, are messages that can change the world. Which ultimately brings us back to our text from Isaiah that I just shared with you. There is something very interesting, I think, that happens in it. Much like in the reading from Luke that I also did, we begin the first verse by learning that what we are about to read is about someone who is filled with the Spirit. Isaiah begins saying, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me." And Luke begins saying, "Then Jesus, filled with the power of the Spirit." With that in mind, it's important to remember that just because Jesus read the text that I read for you today and finished it by saying, today the scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing, it doesn't mean that the texts are solely about him. As a matter of fact, when you isolate the Isaiah text that he was quoting, it's surprisingly nondescript about who it may be talking about. Many scholars actually say that it is expressively just about Isaiah. More or less, it's not about Jesus. I personally happen to believe that there is a reason that it's not just about one or the other. And for me, this text is about anyone who is Spirit-filled. I think the author of Luke understood that, and I think it's the reason he specifically tells us, before telling us about Jesus reading from Isaiah in the temple, that Jesus was filled with the power of the Spirit. If I'm right, and our texts from Isaiah are about a person who is filled with the Spirit, or said differently, if it is about anyone who is Spirit-filled, then yes, it is. The Scripture is fulfilled in Jesus' reading of it because he was filled with the Spirit. But equally, it is fulfilled each time anyone who is Spirit-filled reads them. The verses of Scripture from Isaiah and Jesus' reading of them in defining his ministry challenge those of us who want to follow in the teachings of Jesus, who want to walk in his Spirit-filled ways to bring good news to the oppressed. They invite us to shed the false pretenses that divide us, to give our cloak to those in need, to take off our crowns of superiority and dig our bare feet in as we stand our ground with those who are marginalized, belittled, abused. They challenge us to be hope for the world. They challenge us to bind up the brokenhearted. We're to remove anything that stands between us and offering care to those who hurt, who struggle, who mourn, who deal with depression, who suffer from sickness. They challenge us to be hope for the world. These texts challenge us to proclaim liberty to the captives and release to the prisoners. They call us to not only care for those who are incarcerated, but to recognize that this world is full of trappings that make people captive. It calls us to cast off the trappings of this world, which we wear as if we were kings and queens, to stop letting the world dictate what matters, what is important, and to live into the stark reality that the only thing that matters, the only purpose of our being, is to give and to receive love and grace and hope. They challenge us to be hope for the world. They call us into discipleships of equal, where no one lords over another, where we do not define ourselves over and against each other by wrapping ourselves in earthly garments of power, prestige, and privilege and self-promotion, but rather where we stand naked together, stripped of all the things that divide us, and where we are reminded that we are created equally in the image of God. They invite us to practice authentic actions which, no matter how small, are messages that can change the world. In short, they challenge us to be hope for the world. My hope is this: that in the reading of the Scripture today, it has been fulfilled. That you will be moved by the Spirit to put into practice authentic actions. It can not only change everyone here, but when multiplied together, can change the world. I hope that you will strip off all of the trappings and expectations of our society and dig your feet into the fertile soil of God's love, grace, and hope, and dare to share it recklessly with the world. In short, my hope is that you and me and all of you, my hope is that we become hope for the world. Thanks be to God.